Welcome to the For Money Audio Commentary. This is David Fuller on Friday, the 3rd of August, recording at 9:24 p.m., and that's British Summer Time. Now, this being Friday, this is a big picture long-term outlook for the various asset classes. But first, a quick review of the week. Well, there's certainly been some turbulence in here. And the big drama really has been in the last couple of days, because we had a bit of a risk-off day yesterday and reverted very much to a risk-on day here today. I deplore the terminology. I apologize for the use of risk-on, risk-off, but everybody knows what it means. And so today definitely belonged to the bulls. It didn't start that way in Asia. We had most stock markets down just a wee bit. But in Europe, we had very strong gains. And the catalyst for this was really an announcement that the Merkel coalition members show acceptance. I'm reading the headline, Merkel coalition members show acceptance of ECB bond buying. Now, I think that was more important than another announcement that came out around the same time here early this afternoon, to the effect that U.S. unemployment or U.S. employment figures rather came in higher than expected. But I think the first one was more important, because Europe is very much the focal point of concerns. But the net result of that is that both the Italian and Spanish stock market indices are up over 6% here today. The German DAX is up nearly 4%, French CAC up over 4%. And 4.83% for the Euro Stoxx 50. The Americas had a strong day here as well, holding most of the gains. The biggest gains were in Brazil, up over 3%. But the S&P finished up nearly 26 points, and that's taking it up to nearly 1391, effectively 1391, and that's up 1.9%. The NASDAQ firmer still. Long-dated government bond prices were hit quite hard against this background, meaning the yields rose, and they had bonds had been strong yesterday, but those gains have been reversed in here today. Now, again, the U.S. dollar had rallied yesterday, but reversed those gains today. And the euro, benefiting from that announcement about the ECB bond buying, is up to 123.79. And the Aussie back up to 105.61. Sterling is up to 156.38. The US dollar index down nearly a full point to 82.37. Asian dollar index and Latin American dollar index, both of those rose. We also saw some very firm action in precious metals here today. Silver is currently up 71 cents. Now, these had been retreating earlier in the week, as you know. And certainly they stemmed those declines here today. And gold, which they'd all been retreating, but reaching lows within their ranges yesterday. And gold is currently up over $14.50 at $16.03 and change. Crude oil, which had been range bound but had a big upside day here today, The Brent up $3 to 109, and the WTI is up $4.25 here to 91.36, still trading in after hours. Industrial metals, which had been down yesterday, are all higher here today. Indeed, most commodities are higher today. An exception is natural gas, and it looks like sugar is a fraction lower here as well. Grains and beans, which have been really sort of churning near their historic highs, but they had an up day within those ranges today. Okay, so what's going on here overall? Well, the European situation is hugely influential generally because people have been alarmed by the economic slump, and understandably so, and worried about the impossibility, seemingly, of bringing in the austerity measures and yet also generating some sort of growth, especially as they couldn't devalue. Well, the euro, despite the rally that we've seen in here today, has certainly been on the weak side here in recent months, and probably benefits Germany more than anyone else. And what it has not done, of course, is it has not made Southern Europe more competitive relative to Germany, and so that's a major concern. But where are we going from here? Well, what we've been saying is that Mario Draghi, the European Central Bank president, has been strongly indicating that he's going to move in the direction of the Fed with his own version of quantitative easing, and therefore with the ECB really behaving as the lender of last resort. And the Bundesbank has been opposing this, but and I wrote about this yesterday actually as well. And it's just saying that the ECB might lose a battle or two, and it appeared to lose one yesterday, but people have rethought that today, especially in light of this headline that I read to you in the beginning, and mainly that the Merkel coalition members accept the EC buy, the premise of the ECB buying European government bonds. So, where does that actually leave us? We've got the Fed, which is in super accommodative mode. We have the ECB, which is moving forward with its own program of quantitative easing, as I've just discussed. We have Japan, where things change, as I've described it in the past. Things change in Japan with the speed of moves in the tectonic plates. In other words, very slowly. But the government in Japan is gradually replacing retiring Bank of Japan monetary hardliners with inflationists. So we can see the future here, and it's more stimulus. And we also have more monetary accommodation now coming from the growth economies, China-led growth economies. So there's a lot of reflating going on, and that's helping to underpin stock markets and lift the more interesting equity situations, not least autonomies and high-yielding companies, against the background of this really extremely weak global GDP growth. Now, I would argue that in terms of opportunities in stock markets, that reasonably attractive valuations in a slow global GDP growth environment And against a background of monetary easing coming from virtually all central banks, is infinitely preferable to a stock market environment where you have strong to overheating global GDP growth, forcing central banks to tighten monetary policy to curb inflationary pressures. That's what we get at the top of bull markets more often than not. And what we're seeing here is generally supportive of equities, but then we have to weigh that against earnings disappointments that are occurring and ongoing fears about the state of the Eurozone, about the weakness in China's economy, et cetera, you know, all those bearish arguments overall. But my point here is this current monetary environment and the current valuations, particularly in terms of these multinational companies and high yielders, is not all that bad. Now, I've also mentioned and written for such a long period of time, really going back to 2000, that we were in a valuation contraction cycle. And indeed, we are. This began in 2000, and if you take these Western markets, and you really should focus on Wall Street here because it's the center of this valuation contraction cycle, and you look at multiples and yields in 2000 and compare them with the multiples and yields today, well, people will argue, and rightly so, that, well, Wall Street isn't all that cheap. Not with the S&P just yielding a little bit more than 2%, but it's a heck of a lot better than it was back in 2000. And this is due to, or despite the indices ranging sideways, we have had some growth during that period, of course, and particularly we've had some earnings growth during that period, and dividends have gone up, and multiples are generally lower than they were. So again, not all that bad a background. Now we come back to the August effect, and a lot of people worrying that it was going to be deja vu all over again, to quote Yogi. And certainly we had a grim August last year, and also in 2010, although not in 2009, we had a very grim August in 2008. Well, the jury's still out on this, to coin a phrase, and largely because this is only the 3rd of August. But the key technical factor, and ultimately these are the most important factors in my opinion, is that for Wall Street and for now, an increasing number of European stock market indices, we see this progression of higher reaction lows. So, what that means is that technically you can't have a significant correction, let alone the bear market that so many people have been talking about, without breaking those progressions of rising lows. And I've mentioned in every one of my broadcasts that the key level for the S&P is the 1325. Well, we're at 1391 on tonight's close. Now, technically, there is also some resistance for the U.S. indices and a lot of other indices near the higher side of the ranges, and these rallies that have been occurring, these jagged rallies, in other words, three steps forward, two steps back type of thing, that we've been seeing for a lot of these stock markets since early June and continuing, that they have taken a lot of these indices back to, if not the upper side of their ranges, as we see with Wall Street, to the upper middle part of their ranges, depending on which indices we're actually looking at. And some of the world's stronger stock markets have just broken up out of those ranges. And a number of the ASEAN markets have done that, and a number of, well, and what else? We've seen South Africa do that. We've seen Mexico do that, and that's obviously favorable action. But again, Wall Street, given the importance of the Wall Street leash effect, we need to watch its resistance levels, and it is up near the higher side of that range. So I've been saying, don't be surprised if we get some backing and filling in here, and this has certainly been pretty choppy here in the last few days. But as long as those rising lows, as long as they're maintained, then the demand side has the upper hand marginally. And that's good news here relative to what a lot of people have actually been forecasting. Okay, now what about these long-dated government bond markets? Well, Bill Gross has received a lot of publicity for talking about end of the cult of the equity in here, although he didn't quite say that if you actually read through it. And I've written about it here today, so I'm not going to review those arguments. I've got a couple of good reports, including that one from Michael Jones of Riverfront, and I've also posted the Bill Gross report. But really, the most important part of his report, in my opinion, is his comments right at the end, where he says that historically governments have always inflated their way out of these debt problems. Now, that's very much the Fuller money view, and it's not just, and has been for a number of years now, and that's not just fanciful or creative thinking or whatever, but I'm taking it from Mr. Bernanke. We will not, or why deflation would occur here, why we would allow deflation in the U.S. economy. And that takes us to all the quantitative easing. Now, if you have a central bank, as we do, which is committed to fending off deflation, that makes it much less likely that the U.S. is going to be locked into a Japan-type situation. In Japan, the hardliners have been in charge at the BOJ, although, as I say, they're being replaced with reflationists as they retire. And you have an ECB that has little choice, in my opinion, as I've repeatedly stated, other than to reflate its way out of the current problems. Now, if that's a bull scenario for long-dated government bonds at record low yields, well, that view defies belief, in my opinion. Although there are many people who do hold it, and they're expecting massive deflationary pressure. It's the only way you can rationalize holding on, let alone buying more of these bonds at these record low yields. Now, they point to the strong performance over the last 30 years, and indeed it has been a very strong performance. But think of where they were coming from. Back in 1982, that was the actual peak in the yields for these long-dated government bonds due to Paul Volcker's squeeze. So, depending on which country you're talking about, let's take the US, up over 15% yields. Now, a bond market, long government bond market, where the yields are coming down from above 15% on their way to record lows, well, that is one heck of a bull market, but it is mathematically impossible for that type of performance to be repeated in future. Bonds are going to have to move upwards at some point, and therefore I maintain my view, and among a lot of institutional investors, this would be a contrary opinion view at this stage, contrarian view at this stage, that the money flooding into bonds, and there has been a lot of it, This is the real bubble in here today. And I also think that there's a time bomb here next to these record low yields, which will just tempt central banks to pump in even more money, see more QE in their efforts to stimulate GDP growth and also to inflate away a good chunk of their massive debt burdens, which continue to grow. So again, a time bomb here in these long-dated government bond markets. But what we cannot see is the actual digital clock on that time bomb, telling us how much time we've actually got left before this thing explodes. And it's likely to happen very suddenly and very dramatically, and cause bond yields to eventually surge upwards. But there isn't anyone on the planet that I'm aware of that knows whether that's going to happen this year or several years down the road. But it is very, very likely to happen. And that would be a disaster for bond investors while those yields were moving upwards. Bill Gross thinks they're going to go back to 7 or 8%. And that would not surprise me at all. So that's one heck of a capital loss on those long-dated government bond positions. Now, how would equities fare against that background? Well, there are certainly risks for equities in a more inflationary environment. And but equities are a better hedge against inflation than bonds. First place, equities or companies can raise prices for a lot of their products. Not all of them can. It depends on how competitive the industry actually is and how much demand there is for their products. But a number of them can certainly do that. And believe you me, they will. So, and also, a number of these companies are the antithesis of their governments in that they have very strong balance sheets and they're paying good, attractive returns overall. And historically, when long-dated government bond yields start to move upwards, that tends to be supportive of equities initially, as some of that money, big pension fund money and so on, it starts to come out of the bond market as they see their capital values eroded and flow into the stock market. And we haven't seen much of that for a long time, but that is something that has occurred over the decades, and that we're very likely to see again. It isn't until the firmer stock market comes up against a strong competitive challenge from bond yields, when the bond yields are sufficiently high, so people can say, well, I would rather take this guaranteed return over the next 10 years or whatever, depending on the duration of that bond, relative to the risks in a more volatile stock market overall, that equities start to run into trouble. But you look at the last 100 years, and equities have way outperformed bonds, although bonds have had a great bull market following the bear market, the great bear market, up until 1982, when that bull market commenced. You can see that on their charts in the library, and there's a rather good graphic, a sort of 100-year graphic that Michael Jones has in his report that I am posting today. Now, what about gold? Well, if Bill Gross is right, and we see all of these Western economies and Japan in future attempting to inflate their way out of their current debt problems, That's a powerful bull case for gold. Meanwhile, these precious metals have been ranging near the lows of this big medium-term correction that they've seen overall. We are heading towards a more favorable period seasonally. The background of low interest rates is positive for gold. The gold bulls are much more subdued here today. We still get some big forecasts to the upside, but with which I agree over the medium term. But we certainly do not have an overheating gold market here right now. It's on the lower side of its medium-term correction range. I think this is a support-building process, but as I've said in every one of these audios in recent weeks, we won't have confirmation of that until uptrends are established, albeit within these ranges. And then when you start to get gold back above $1,800, and I think there's a real chance we could see that before the end of this year, then the evidence will be irrefutable that demand is very much in control in the bullion market. But again, I maintain that the background fundamentals here are positive for gold and other precious metals once again. The market has doubts about that. We know that. Because prices are continuing to range here, but I maintain, particularly for those of you who invest in bullion funds, and I much prefer those to the gold shares. Although I don't quibble with the arguments that people make that gold shares are at historically low levels relative to bullion, but they're also wasting assets. I've always regarded gold shares as much more risky than bullion itself, and I would rather buy the gold shares when the whole world and his uncle can see that gold bullion is in an overall upward trend, and that's or resuming in an upward trend, and that's not the case today. So, what else to mention in these commodities? The food problem, food inflation, we're certainly going to get from those commodity prices as a result of the drought in the United States and elsewhere around the globe. This is a very worrying situation, as I've mentioned on many occasions, because it's the third consecutive year in which we've seen considerable crop damage overall. The most important commodity is always oil, and that will remain so for a good many more years yet. What I'm hoping we don't see is a spike in crude oil prices. I think the fundamentals would generally argue against a spike in crude prices. But we have the risk of an eventual attack on Iran's nuclear installations. That could certainly cause at least a temporary spike. And if it's a big dramatic move, that can be a shock for a global economy, which is still a bit shaky, to put it mildly. There's the risk that of supply reductions. These are problems that I've described as being within the second of two consecutive decades of tight energy supplies overall. But as the time clock continues to tick, those risks are mitigated somewhat by the spread of so-called tight oil and gas production, or shale. As that spreads around the globe, that will alleviate the situation somewhat. We also have all the subsidized wind farms, and particularly the solar. power. And when solar is provided, you have some sunshine. The solar power is a much more attractive option, in my opinion, than the wind farms. But I don't want to digress on that. We're going to see more efforts in terms of renewables, and we're going to see more oil and gas production, largely due to those tight oil shale type operations. And with the global GDP growth slow, the demand has not been picking up all that much, except in the in the growth economies. But that demand growth rate has slowed as their economies have slowed overall. Wrap it all up, and it's an interesting world in here. It's one where we need to be careful. It's a world in which we see a considerable amount of volatility. We need to remember buy low, sell high. And it's a world increasingly dominated by the high-frequency algorithmic trading, and that makes trading for the rest of us more hazardous than it's been in previous decades because the volatility is greater. And interesting times. So I think I've covered all the major bases here, so I'll just say have a terrific weekend. There'll be some great sports to watch if you're not participating in your own sports, or but whatever you're doing, have a great weekend. All the best.